We are holding on Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, the sixth line. So we're in the middle of talking about Dinim of Netilas Yadayim, and we've talked about so far when you need to wash. We talked about what kind of water you need to wash. Now let's talk about the fat. Now let's talk about that. We also talked about that you have this Netilas Yadayim and there's Tevilas Yadayim. There's you can wash your hands from a cup, or there can be that you tovel your hands in a mikveh or something or some kind of body of water that could serve as a mikveh. As also we said, there's a possibility with that as well. So now let's talk about more details. Now let's talk about more details in that regard. So the Gemara says Amar Papa. On the side over here it says a Girsa Rova. Hi Arisa de Deloy, a channel of water that's used to water fields, where Rashi describes what they do is they pour in water in there from buckets, and then the current brings the water to the fields. So in other words, to begin with, you have so here Rashi is describing like you have buckets that are poured into the pastures by hand. You could also have maybe like a water wheel that pours water into it. But in any case, the point is that you have, so at the beginning, as we're going to talk about in a minute, you have koyach gavra, you have human agency that's bringing that water in there. But afterwards, then further down, then you don't have that. You don't have a human being involved in pouring that water over there. So the Papa says, you cannot wash your hands from that, meaning, in other words, that you're going to say, not instead of, if you take a cup and take water out of it and pour it on your hands, because under hate, but we're talking about where you would put your water into it, you would put your hands into it, and the water would flow over your hands. The problem is, then you don't have koyach gabri, you don't have human agency over here, because the person, yes, earlier on, somebody poured water into it, but by the time it reaches you, you don't have the water is just flowing on its own, basically. And therefore, it's not valid Netilas Yadayim, and it's not Tevila either, because you don't have enough for a mikveh. An interesting point over here would be, and if there was 40 saw, would it be good enough for a mikveh? It's Mayim Shorvim. It's drawn water. And in fact, Rishonim who have that Girsa over here and say that the problem would be that's Mayim Shovim. However, Rashi seems to not hold like that, and Rashi seems to hold like an opinion of the Ravid that would say that you can't tovel your whole body in such a thing, but it would be good for toveling your hands, whereas most Rishonim disagree with that. So according to Rashi, if this channel of water had 40 sa in it, you would actually be able to tovel your hands in it, even though it's not a valid mikveh, whereas according to the other Rishonim, you can't precisely because it's not a valid mikveh. But in any case, as far as washing your hands in it and consider that the water flowing over them is going to be considered good, that's a problem. That doesn't work because you don't have koyach gavra. However, the Papa goes on to say, the imikra v'gabi davla, if the person, though, puts his hands very close to where the water is being poured in, so Reuven is pouring in water into the ditch over there, and Shimon puts his hands in there right near it, not necessarily directly under the water, but close by, then to call some a koyach gavra, so now very good, the water is in fact coming from koyach gavra, it is coming from human agency, so that would be valid for Netilas Yadayim. It doesn't have to be, in other words, that you yourself are pouring. It doesn't even have to be necessarily that a yid is pouring. It could even be that a goy is pouring. It could be the person who's pouring into the ditch is a goy, and it would still be good because there is at least koyach gavra involved over there. So this comes up, for example, let's say, so nowadays, if you were to wash your hands by putting, let's say, for example, you turn on the faucet and you put your hands underneath it. So the post can explain the same idea. In other words, if you, for example, you turn on the faucet and you put your hands under the first gush of water, then that would be fine. There's koyach gavra over there. But afterwards, the water is flowing on its own, and therefore that's no good. So you would have to open and close the faucet multiple times. Of course, the better thing is to not do that and just use a cup, and then you always have koyach gavra anyhow. But in a similar sense, for example, you also have, for example, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that, for example, you can take a keli, for example, and put it, let's say, between your knees and move it in such a way that every time the keli will tip over again and again, and you'll wash from it, and that could also work. Tostes, by the way, gets into the discussion over here. So again, it seems to imply that you could so he brings from Halachas Gedolos, you would be allowed to toe for your hands in a keli, the same way, for example, as the Kohenim can't do Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim from within the Kiyo, because there's a pasuk that says they have to wash from it, but otherwise it seems to imply that it would have been good. But over here, we're saying that you still need Koyach Gavra. But then, so Tosfos discusses, would it be fine or not? Can you, in fact, tovel your hands in a keli? And Tosfos gets into various details about that. Also, Tosfos points out in this connection, speaking of that, other dinim and shelos yadayim that are not really being addressed in the Gemara over here. But, for example, that if a person washed his hand and then touched the other hand with it, he would have to wash again. Because then the one hand that's tummy makes his other hand tummy. So you do have to actually be careful when you wash. You do have to be careful to not allow the one hand that was already washed to touch the other one that you didn't wash yet. And for that matter, also you have an issue. For that matter, the Alter Rebbe points out in Seder and Tefillas Yadayim that you also have an issue with the water that's on the keli. The water that's on the side of the keli, where also that water is not yet tohor, and it's going to be the tamei the other hand. This is why you have many labavitchers when they wash for bread, they'll hold the washing cup with a towel or something like that in order to avoid that problem, because otherwise technically the washing is not valid. But in addition, also, yeah, if you touch your other unwashed hand or you touch somebody else whose hands aren't washed yet, then you would actually have to wash again. That's another point that Tosfos brings up over here. In any case, again, so you have this point over here that the water has to be from Koyach Gavra, and again, according to Manu Rishonim, you also have the issue that even if there were 40 sa over here, it's also an addition, it's a problem, that the water is Mayim Shuvim, and therefore it's no good. Okay. Continues the Gemara. V'id b'ziyah davla b'koynes mashke. Now here's another case. Suppose that the bucket from which the guy is pouring into the stream, into the ditch over there, suppose that that bucket has a hole in it the size of koynes mashke, which is large enough that liquids will leak in through it. Meaning, so you have like this. In Halacha, for example, there can be a hole in a keli that's large enough for moitzi mashke, that liquid will drip out of it, that you have a small leak over there, a small crack, and water will drip out. But then you have slightly larger, which is, not only will it leak out, but if you take this keli and put it onto the surface of a liquid, then liquid will leak in, through that crack. So now, if you have a hole like that, then we say melech lifei. So now what happens is the water in the bucket is considered to be connected with the water in the ditch. Therefore, now Rashi explains you would be able to tovel your hands in the ditch because it's connected. Now, in other words, it's considered connected to the keli. Now, when it comes to the halachas and mikvos, usually for one body of water to be connected to another, to be considered a valid mikvah, to make a total of 40 sa, you need a larger amount. You need what's called kishveferes hanoid, the size of a tube that's used for a standard kind of tube that they used in those days for a bottle containing liquids. It's defined in halacha as the size of your first two fingers next to one another, the index finger and the middle finger, where you have enough room to rotate them freely. That's called kishveferes hanoid. Here we're talking about a much smaller hole than that. Nevertheless, Rashi says that's good enough for our purpose in order to tovel your hands. Tosfos points out there's another point as well. It's also usually in halacha, when you have liquid pouring from one container into another, usually that's not considered that they're connected in halacha. But here, even though you have that, it's pouring from the bucket into the stream through this tiny little hole over there. And you also have, again, that's not even kishveres hanoid, nevertheless, that's good enough to be able to tovel your hand in it. So there is that point over there. Again, so you do have this tiny little stream that's good enough to connect them. There is a different point over here, though, that we've shown and point out, that there a different point that the Gemara is making over here, which is the fact that the bucket has a hole means that you can't wash your hands with that. Because in order to, you also have to have that the keli itself that you use for washing your hands does not have a hole in it. And if it has a hole, then that's another matter, and that's another girsa that we've shown him have over here, that they would be another issue as well, that you can't wash with the bucket itself, because it has a hole of that size. So you have actually the details about that. Post can talk about that so you have the what about, for example, if there is a hole, but below the hole it will still hold the revius. Is that good enough? So the post can talk about different details and different possibilities in that. So the Alter Rebbe summarizes it and says that no, even if it holds a revius or more than a revius below the hole, the Alter Rebbe explains basically that the part that has a hole is no longer considered a keli. So therefore, it comes out when you're pouring from the lip of the keli. When you're pouring from the lip of the cup, then they're not coming from a keli. So that would be a problem. And therefore, in short, you have to have that the keli is intact all the way to the top. By the same token, the Alter Rebbe points out, sometimes you have these cups that have a little spout on one side, and the water then won't, let's say, for example, you have some pitchers you have a spout on the side where the lip of the spout is a little bit lower than the lip of the rest of the keli. You wouldn't be able to wash from the rest of the keli. Only from the area of that spout, because anything above that is not going to hold water anymore. Because again, then the water is going to seek its own level. So you have that consideration as well. Okay, so in that connection, Omar Rava. So Rava actually says klisha nikka v'koines mashka ein loitim menali adayim. A keli that has a hole in it, the size where liquid would leak in, is not considered a keli, and therefore you can't wash with it. So that's a separate din. Here we'll be mentioning koines mashka as far as this business of water flowing from the bucket into the ditch, where there you have koyach gavra. But now in addition, you also have a din that the cup itself cannot have a hole of koines mashka. And in fact, yeah, so the Rosh actually brings a girsa over here that ties these two dinim together. You can have the water flowing from it to the ditch, and therefore you can tovo your hands in the ditch, but you cannot wash your hands from the bucket itself because it has this hole. Next. The Gemara says, V'amar Rava, Kli she'en bo revius ein noten mimena liyadayim. A keli that cannot hold a revius, you cannot wash your hands from it. A revius, depending which posik you ask, is somewhere between about 3 and 5 ounces approximately. So that would be the minimum that you need. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? Va'omar Rava cliche machzik revius, ein noten mimena liyadayim. Rava says that a keli, so here we're saying a keli that doesn't have a revius. In other words, implying that the keli is able to hold more than a revius, but in this case you only have a revius, you have less than a revius of water in it, so Rava says then that's not good enough. But now, on the other hand, Robert says a keli that doesn't hold a revius ain't noten mimena liyadayim, then you can't wash with it. Chom machzik, implying that if it will hold a revius, afgav delesmei, even if it doesn't have a revius of water in it, so then it sounds like you could still wash with it. So what is it? Is it that it has to be able to hold a revius, or that it actually has a revius of water in it? And the answer is loikasha holachad holatre. There's no contradiction, because it depends whether we're talking about one person washing from it or two people. For one person to wash, you need a full revius in there. But if one person washed from it and then somebody else is washing, even though you don't have a revius left for the second one, then that's fine. It's called shiore tara. So it's called what's left over from Tara, and that's fine. You have mesechta yadayim. You have one of the last mesechtas of Mishnayos and Seder Taras. It's called Masechta Yadayim, and it talks about these dinim of Netilas Yadayim, and in general the dinim of Tara of hands. So many of the dinim of Netilas Yadayim come from there, and here our Gemara is going to be quoting some Mishnayos, some Mishnayos and things related to that. So you have this concept again. If you have a revius of water over there, and then somebody else is washing from what's left of the revius, then that would be fine. Then that would be fine, because originally it was there. Originally you had enough there for Tara. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, or the Tanan, actually, it says on the side, it's a Mishnah, Mei Revius, Noten Le'adayim, La'echod, Vafil L'shnayim. When it comes to a Revius, you can have one person, or even two people, can wash from it, and therefore that's fine. So therefore, as long as you had a Revius to begin with, then one other person, then another person could use what's left for, or could use what's left for washing. What if it's left? So it's not enough. Well, there has to be enough to cover his hands, at least. With that said, though, this is according to Rashi and Tosfos. There are a number of Rishonim who disagree with that and say that, no, you know when that would be allowed? If you have Reuven sticks his hand, so if you have Reuven is pouring from a cup, let's say, and now Shimon puts his hands below the stream of water, and Levi puts his hands below Shimon's, so that the same stream of water is flowing onto Shimon's hands, and then onto Levi's, then it would be fine, even though obviously you're not going to really have a Revius reaching Levi's hands, because Shimon's hands are in the way. Nevertheless, it would work because it's coming from Shiore Tara. But according to the Ramban and the Rashba and many other Rishonim, they say if it was that Shimon washed his hands and then left less than a revius of water in the cup, and then Levi wants to wash, then it would be no good. And then also they talk about that there's a difference whether Levi intended to use this water. Or no, he comes later on and finds there's not a revius, then it wouldn't be called shiore tara, and therefore you wouldn't be able to do it. So in practice, this idea that you should be able to use what's left of a revius is not so simple. Because of these different dinim. So in practice, basically you need a revius for each person. Oh, as far as, by the way, I was mentioning before that if you have somebody pouring the water and it doesn't matter if it's a goy or not, so actually the Alter Rebbe does bring that yesh machmirim, some are machmir, that you shouldn't have a goy wash your hands, or also not a nidah, and he says, v'tov lochosh v'divreim, it's good to be choshish for that. So let's say, for example, if you have, a person is in a nursing home or a hospital or whatever, and the only person available to help you wash is one of the nurses, then fine, I guess you could rely on that. But ordinarily, where possible, it's better to have a yid, it's better to have a yid pour the water. Fine. The Gemara continues. Amalei Rav Sheshes la Meima. Rav Sheshes asks a Meima, Kapdisu Amona. Are you careful when you wash your hands to make sure that you're using a kavi that's whole and not, like we said, that it has a hole, not that we said that it has a hole or a crack or whatever in it? So Amalei Ein, and then a Meima says yes. So he asks him, Achazusa, are you also careful about the color of the water, that it should actually look like the color of water and not that something else was mixed into it? And he says also yes. Now, this is one of those things where the Mishnah in Yadayim says, Mishnah in Masechta Yadayim, says that, for example, if ink or something like that fell into it and changed the color, then it would be possible. So what does Rav Sheshes have to ask Amema? We know, obviously, he's following what it says in the Mishnah. Tosfos explains, because you could say the Mishnayos over there in Masechta Yadayim are primarily talking about washing in order to eat truma, where you need a higher standard of tara in order to eat truma, because truma midaraisi, you're not allowed to eat when it's tameh, and therefore once midrabanan they made a takana that a person's hands are tameh, then therefore so when you're washing for truma, you have to hold to a higher standard. How would we know? The same thing applies to cholin as well. So Rav Sheshes asks the Amema, are you careful about that when you're eating cholin as well? And Amema says yes.
So
what if the lake is very dirty? So it depends. Basically, the idea is the water has to be, the water has to be drinkable by an animal. So if the water is dirty so much that an animal wouldn't drink from it, then you can't wash from it. If it's just the water was discolored a little bit because there's a little bit of dirt mixed into it, that might not necessarily be a problem. Here, the Alter Rebbe summarizes it as that. If it looks different than water, whether machmas mekoimam, whether because of the place, because for example, let's say there's a lot of dirt mixed into it, or something fell into it, then it would be possible. Or also, for example, if it got discolored because of smoke or whatever, then it would be possible because of natilas yadayim. If it's just dirty, if it's just dirty with dirt, then it would be fine. If it's so dirty that even a dog wouldn't drink from it, then it's possible. And also the same thing if it smells bad or is bitter or salty or whatever. And for that reason, the Alter Rebbe explains, you can't wash your hands, for example, with seawater. You could tovel your hands in the sea because, again, that would be considered a mikveh. But you could, and then the same thing as far as water that's dirty or whatever, as far as tovelling is different. Tovelling, there's no rule that the water has to be clean. So therefore, so you have other considerations over there. But when it comes to Tullus Yadayim, the water has to be clean enough, and it has to be clean enough that at least a dog would drink from it.
Would a dog drink from like an algae lake?
Would a dog drink from a lake with algae? I have no idea. Bring a dog there and find out. I don't know. All right. Onward. Okay, so again, so Rav Sheshes is asking a Meimar, whether you're careful about the keli is intact, yes. Are you careful about the color? Yes. Ashiura, are you careful about the shiur that you have at least a revius? Omalei ein. And again, a Meimar says, yes, I'm careful about that also, that there should be the shiur, that there should be a revius, where again, the idea is that he would have had to ask him, because again, maybe you would require only a revius. Maybe you would require a revius only for truma, but I may say no. We're careful as far as regular washing as well. Ikadamri, but then there's another version. Hochi amalei that. In a second version, Amemar tells him, no, Amonavach Azusa Kabdinan, we're careful about the keli that should be intact, and we're careful about the color that it should actually look like water, Ashiura loy Kabdinan, but we're not careful about the shear that there should be a revius, Titania, because again, we learn in a Breiser, actually a Ditnan, again, it's a Mishnah, may revius, noten leidan la'echad vafir l'shnayim, that from one revius, you could have one person wash, or even two people wash, so that implies that you don't need a revius for each person. But the Gemara says, v'loyhi, that's not a valid explanation though. Shiny Hossam, Shrim to Kossim, Shiore Tara, because again, there it's coming from the leftovers of Tara, meaning that one person washed with it, and therefore what's left over is available for somebody else to wash with it, but not the Hatchila that the first person should be washing with less than a Revius, that you can't do. And again, you have the different Rishonim, the Ramban and the Rashba and others, who learn that even with two people, it would have to be that one places his hands under the other and gets the same gush of water that goes on the one's hands, goes on the next person's hands. Now, Tosfos asks, according to this version, what was Amemar thinking? Doesn't he realize the Mishnah says Meir Revius Lachad? And again, he would have thought for Truma, but if for Truma you don't need for the second one, then for Cholin, maybe you don't even need a Revius for the first one, and therefore the Gemara is saying it's not so. For the first one, you definitely need a Revius, no question about that. So far we have a number of the basic dinim of Netilas Yadayim. In this connection, by the way, you also have the question of an interesting point of how many times you need to wash. The strict din would be that you need to wash only once if your hands are clean and there's no chatzitza on them. There is an idea that the Rishonim bring based on the Mishnayos and Yadayim over there that you need to wash at least twice, because the idea is your hands are tamei, the water that touches your hands itself becomes tamei, and then you have to wash again in order to remove that tamei water, in order to wash away that tamei water. Meanwhile, in the Rosh's summary of the halachas on Or Masechta, he brings, of course, many of these dinim over here, and you also have a note. You also have notes that are written on the Rosh called Hagois Oshri, which there it also adds the idea that sometimes you need three times. In particular, if you didn't check your hands for dirt or chatzitzis beforehand, then you need one time washing in order to remove that. Another time because then the water is still going to be tamei, and then a third time to remove the second. So the minhag of most of the Jewish world then holds that you only need two times minhag chabad based on that Hagois Oshri is in fact to do three times, and that's how we do it always, whether our hands are clean or not. So talking about this point that you need a revius, so now people are not always necessarily going to know to be careful. So the Gemara says, asking Rabbi Yaakov Nahar Pekud not labas reviosa. Rabbi Yaakov in the city of Nahar Pekud he made an official napla, which is the name for the keli that Tullus Yadayim is done with. He made an official keli out of glass, which was the size of a revius. The point is, this would be the standard according to which everybody else could measure theirs. Everybody else who was going to make a washing cup could come to Rabbi Yaakov and check whether their cup is at least the size of his, and then they know that they have at least a cup that holds at least a revius. This is, in fact, the fact that the keli is called a natla is one reason why we call washing the Tullus Yadayim, because we're washing with a natla. Another reason that's given by the poskim is because the word netilah also means to lift up. And when you're washing, you're supposed to lift up, as we learned about yesterday. You're supposed to lift up your fingertips a little bit to have them pointed a little bit upward, so that the water will correctly flow onto your whole hand. Otherwise, like, parts of your hand may not get properly washed. And similarly, the Gemara says, "Askin of Ashi b'Hutzel Kuzah Bas Rav Yosef." Similarly, Rav Ashi made in Hutzel a kuzah, a little container made out of earthenware, also that holds a revius for the same reason, to use that as a standard for everybody else to measure their washing cups against. Okay. Another din about kalim for washing. So Amar Rava Megufas Chobis Shetikna. If you take the stopper of a barrel and you hollow it out to hold the revius. Now, this stopper is not meant to hold liquid in the first place. It's just meant to keep the barrel, to be on top of the barrel, to keep it closed so that the wine doesn't spoil, or whatever you're keeping in the barrel. But now you took this earthenware plug and you made a hole in it the size of a revius. So that notun menalei adayim, you would be able to wash your hands. You would be able to wash your hands from it. Now, Tosfa says, so what's the chiddush then? Of course, if it holds a revius, what's the problem? Rather, the point is, Tosfa says that to begin with, it would actually hold a revius. The problem was, the outside of it was shaped in such a way where if you put it like this, you put it upside down over the barrel, but if you put it right side up, in the way that it would hold a revius, the problem is it would tip over. The only way it would hold a revius is if it's held up with something else. So now, until now, you couldn't use it for Netilas Yadayim, and the vote would be that now, how do you make it? Is that you're going to recarve the outside of it. You're going to recarve the outside of it so that it will stand, unaided, and therefore then that's good enough. And there are different other explanations also. The Prima Godim gives an explanation in Rashi that the problem is, again, like Tosfa says, it already held a revius, but the problem is it wasn't meant to hold liquids. It wasn't the fact that it has a hollow, like you think nowadays, let's say, of a bottle cap. I mean, a bottle cap holds a lot less than a revius, but hypothetically, if you had a bottle cap that was the size of a revius, could you use it for Netilas Yadayim? Not necessarily. It's not meant to hold liquids. It just happens to be that it holds a revius. So the vote would be over here that you're specifically shaping it in such a way that now it will hold a revius, and you're having in mind that it's going to be used as a utensil to hold things, now it will become kosher for Netilas Yadayim. And again, you have Tosfos' point, which is that it would hold a revius, and it would have been fine were it not for the fact that it tips over, and therefore you have to recarve it in such a way. And the point is, even though you're only recarving the outside of it, you're not doing anything to the inside, nevertheless, that makes a difference, and therefore it's fine, and therefore you can use it for Netilas Yadayim now. And the Gemara says, Tanya and Amihochi, we learn indeed in a braisa, exactly that. Megufas chovas shetikna, if you have a stopper of a barrel and you prepared it by carving it out to hold a revius and by carving the outside, or the different explanations that we were just saying, noitnum menali yadayim, then you can use it for netilas yadayim. Similarly, chemes ukfisha. Similarly, a chemes, or a kfisha, which are various kinds, and Rashi describes these are various kinds of skin bottles. So again, they're meant to hold liquids. The problem is that they won't stand unaided because they're made out of leather. They're collapsible. But shetiknon, if you prepared them and you made them that now they'll be able to stand unaided, noitlin menali adayim, then you're also allowed to wash your hands with it for the same reason, because now they'll stand firmly. So now they're considered like a regular washing cup, and now you can wash with them. On the other hand, sack the kupa, on the other hand, continues the braisa, a sack or a basket, alpha pisha makablin, even if you made them able to hold water, though most of those, it actually explains, are not meant to hold water in the first place, because of course the water would leak right out. So even if you put a lining in them, let's say, to make them suitable to hold water, Nevertheless, that's no good because to begin with, they were not designed to hold water. And the idea is, actually, the Magen Avraham explains that the barrel stopper, sometimes you will use it for liquids. Sometimes, for example, you use it as a temporary thing to hold liquids, as opposed to a sack or a basket are never made to hold liquids, and therefore, even if now you added a lining to them, and you made them and you stiffened them so that they'll stand, nevertheless, you still can't use them for Netilas Yadayim. Okay. Fine. So all of that is, so all of those are various dinim as far as, uh, as far as far as the kaolin, what kind of kaolin you can use for natillicidine.
What if it's not made to hold liquid? More often than not, since when I've made, it's held liquid.
So if it's not, if it's more often than not, it's held liquid, then it's probably made to hold liquid. But I don't know. So let's say a sack. Usually people don't use it for liquids because it's going to spill right out. You have holes in the sack. But yeah. So basically you have to have, basically then the dinim are, in short, see here, the Alter Rebbe summarizes it as follows. Again, it has to hold a revius, it has to be a hole without any crack, without any cracks or holes in it, and you have everything that we talked before about the spout and things like that. Then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, let's say, for example, you have a keli that has a hole and you plugged it with something. Still, that's no good. That's no good. It wouldn't make it a keli. That depending on the type of keli and the type of plug, then it might work. For example, with earthenware kalim, you could put in tar, and that would work. Glass, it wouldn't work at all. Then the Alter Rebbe mentions that as far as coverings of kalim, again, even if they hold a revius, they're possible because they're not made to hold liquids, so they're not considered a keli, even if once in a while people put liquids in them. The Alter Rebbe mentions in this connection also a felt hat, for example. You might have a felt hat that's so thick that water won't leak out. And sometimes travelers will use that as a makeshift thing to hold water, but nevertheless, you can't use them to wash with. The Alter Rebbe summarizes because they're not made to hold liquid, so even though once in a while a person might take his felt hat and fill it with water to drink, that's not considered that's made for liquids.
If a keli has rust inside it,
That wouldn't be a problem unless if it causes the water to become discolored, then it would be a problem, like
no.
We were saying before. But no, if it's just that it's rusty, that's not a problem.
It's not a hefsek between the metal and the water. It doesn't matter whether there's a hefsek or not.
You just need that it should be a keli. You don't care where there's no the chatzitza inside the keli is not a problem. It's a chatzitza on your hands that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. So as long as the keli is intact and doesn't have any hole or crack or whatever that goes all the way through and holds at least the revius and then all the other criteria that we said, then it's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do they have two handles on the keli?
So that has to do with what we were talking about before about not touching the wet part. In principle, the idea that Alter Rebbe is explaining earlier in Seder Nesilasidayim, that the water that's on the keli has not become tahor, and therefore that would actually make you hand tummy. So the idea is, in other words, that if you had only one handle on the keli and you washed your hand with it, and then you pick that and then you pick up with your already washed hand to wash on the other hand, now you have a problem. Your washed hand is going to become tummy from the liquid from the wetness on the outside of the keli. Therefore, you have two handles in order to avoid that. And even then, as I said, you have many Lubavitcher chassidim who are careful with that and will hold the cup with a towel or something like that, or even the edge of their jacket if they don't have a towel available, in order to avoid that problem, in order that their hand won't become tummy from the wetness on the chayli.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. Ibar Yelahu, the Chacham had a question. Mahu lechel b'mapa? Are you allowed to eat bread without washing? You're going to hold the bread with a cloth. Do we have to be concerned that you might touch the bread while you're eating it? And as we said, the whole point is you have to wash because mishum srach truma, in order to get chayim accustomed to eating truma batara, that they're not going to be matame it with their hands. So therefore, by the same token, can you cover your hands with a cloth or wear gloves or whatever, and then you're not going to touch it? But is there the concern that actually you might touch it by mistake? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof from a story in Masechta Sukkah. The Mishnah is describing over there the point that how much do you need to eat, how much does it have to be that you're eating in order to eat in the Sukkah? So first the Mishnah mentions over there a couple of Tanoyim where even when they brought them a snack, they would eat it in the Sukkah. That is an appropriate Chumrah to always eat in the Sukkah and not to always eat in the Sukkah, even a snack. That's Minhag Chabad. But in any case, the Mishnah mentions a couple of Tanoim who would do that. But then it continues, when they gave Reb Tzadik food, meaning bread, that was less than a kabeitza inside, he took it in a cloth, and he ate it outside the sukkah, and he didn't bench after it. So in other words, we see that he held it in a cloth and he didn't wash his hands. The fact is you don't have to eat in the sukkah unless you're eating a kibbutzah, is how he held, and therefore he could eat outside the sukkah. Less than that is considered achilas arai. And he didn't bench afterwards because he held that benching you need to do only for a kibbutzah. Now, in that case, why did he use a cloth in the first place? So Rashi explains, because his hands were dirty, so he didn't want to touch it with unclean hands. Tosfos points out, in Yuma, where this Gemara is also brought, points out a different reason that, as the Gemara is going to point out over here, the Tzaddik was a Kohen, so therefore he was always careful to eat his food as if it was Truma. In other words, the point is like this. The idea is, there's two reasons to say why you should have to wash, why you shouldn't have to wash for less than a kibbutzah. One way of looking at it is because washing and benching are tied together. There's a machlokas in the Gemara and Brachas. How much do you need to eat in order to bench? How much bread do you need to eat in order to be required to bench? You have an opinion of Reb Meir that says a kezias and Reb Yehuda says a kibbutzah. Well then, Reb Tzaddik held like Rabbi Yehuda. You need only kibbutzah for benching. So he had eaten less than a kibbutzah, which is why he didn't bench. So that would be one reason, the Vilna Gaon explains, that would be one reason then why he held. In that case, you don't have to wash either. If you don't have to bench, then you don't have to wash. The other way of looking at it is because he held that you have to wash only if it's the amount of food that would be makabel truma. Now, to be makabel, there's a machloikas we've shown him. How much food do you need in order to be makabel truma? So you have a machlokas we've shown him about that as well, whether any amount of food can be makabel truma, or whether you need only a kibbutzah, whether a kibbutzah is the minimum. Well, then he held that a kibbutzah is the minimum to become tomei, so therefore he held that you don't need to wash for it. As a matter of fact, when it comes to benching, the halacha is actually you have to bench for a kazayas. On the other hand, we have the suffix that maybe you need to wash only for a kibbutzah. This is why, if you're going to eat less than a kibbutzah, the halacha is, if you're going to eat between a kezias and a kibbutzah of bread, you don't make a bracha on washing because it's a suffix whether you would need to wash or not. So in fact, the Rekeach brings this in Altadeba, and then the Mechaber in Altadeba, and everybody bring it in their respective Shulchan Aruch, that if you're going to eat less than a kibbutzah, then you do wash, because you may need to wash even for a kezias, but you don't make a bracha, because maybe you only need to make a bracha for a kibbutzah. So we see though that he held it with a cloth and ate it. Now again, according to Rashi in Yuma, the reason why he held it with a cloth is just because because his hands weren't so clean, so he didn't want to bother washing, but he also didn't want to eat it with dirty hands. According to Tosfos, the vote is because truma, even less than a kibbutzah, would be makabel truma, and therefore since he was a kohen, then he was careful to eat according to those standards. Okay, in any case, the point is, my lab ha kibbutzah bo netilas yadayim. So the implication seems to be, had it been a kibbutzah in size, he would have had to wash. So you see, the answer is that you can't hold it in a cloth. As long as you need to wash, you do need to actually wash. And the answer is no. Dilma ha kibbutzah bo sukkah bo bracha. Maybe the reason why the Mishnah mentions that it was less than a kibbutzah is because of the other dinim as far as sukkah and as far as birkas hamazon. The fact that maybe even as far as washing, maybe he would have been allowed to eat it without washing and with a cloth, even when it was a kibbutzah or more. So we can't really prove one way or the other from that story. Now here Tosfos also makes the point that Reb Tzaddik was a Kohen, and therefore you could say that maybe that's why he was extra careful. So Tosfos says over here that in fact the answer is the Gemara could have said that, according to your logic, why you've been asking the question, Reb Tzaddik was a Kohen, the rules for him were different. But in any case, then again, the Gemara in Yuma, the Tosfos in Yuma points out a different point, which is that in any case, precisely that, therefore he would be careful to hold it in a cloth, but that doesn't show how it would have been if it had been a kibbutzah or more. Okay, so we don't have a proof yet, but the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring another proof. The Shmuel Ashkechei L'Rav Ka'ocha B'Mapa. One time Shmuel found Rav eating bread with his hands wrapped in a cloth. So sounds like he hadn't washed. Omalei, so Shmuel tells him Abdin Kedain. Is that the right way to do? Are you supposed to wash with a? Are you supposed to eat bread with a cloth without washing your hands? Omalei. And Rav answers him, Daitik Thorah Alai. My mind is short on me. In Lashon Kodesh, you have an expression, Daita Rechova, which literally means his mind is broad, meaning, in other words, a person is able to tolerate things. And then the opposite of it is Daitik Thorah, like you have the expression, Merubim Sarche Amcha, but Daitik Thorah, the needs of the Jewish people are many, and their das is short. In other words, we're impatient. We're not able to tolerate when we have difficulties. So Daitik Thorah means, in other words, Rashi is saying, Rav is saying, I did wash my hands, but nevertheless, even with washed hands, I still don't want to eat with bare hands. I still want to wrap my hands. So we see, though, the fact that Shmuel is asking, why didn't you wash? And Rav is answering, I did wash, implies that you do have to wash. So that would show, therefore, that you do have to wash, and you can't just wrap your hands in a cloth. So the Gemara goes on. Kisolik Reb Zera. When Reb Zera went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechino the Reb Ami and Reb Asi to Ka'achi Bivloi Chamosi. He found that Reb Ami and Reb Asi, who were both Koyanim, they were eating bread with their hands wrapped in worn out leather bottles. So they had taken, there were worn out leather bottles, and they wrapped their hands in them as kind of like makeshift, makeshift gloves, and they were eating that way. Omar, he says, Tre Gavri Ravravi Kavasaichu, two great Tamar Chachamim like you, Litu, with the Rav of Shmuel. You misunderstood what happened in that story of Rav and Shmuel. You thought that that when Shmuel found Rav eating without his hands washed, would mean you're actually allowed to eat without washing your hands as long as you wrap up your hands. Don't you realize that Rav said, I did wash my hands and just I'm fastidious and therefore I'm still eating with a cloth wrapped around my hands. But not that Rav didn't wash. So how can you, Rav Ami and Rav Asi, be eating without your hands, with your hands wrapped like that and not wash? However, the Gemara says, Ishmitze, Hodo Amar of Tachlifa Barabimi, Amashmo. However, in saying that, Rav Zera had forgotten a point that Rav Tachlifa Barabimi said in the name of Shmuel, he tiru mapa lo'ichle truma. The Chachamim did give a heter as far as eating with a cloth for people who eat truma, namely Koyanim, who eat truma, because the Zoris, they're very careful about mitzvahs, and therefore they're going to be careful not to touch it with their unwashed hands. However, such a thing is not mutter for Yisraelim who are eating chulin b'tara. So even though we talked about earlier in the Masechta extensively all about the case where a person eats his chulin at the standards of tara, nevertheless, though, the fact is it's not actually truma, and these are people who are not regularly eating truma. So they're not necessarily so careful. They're not necessarily going to be so 100% careful to never touch it, and therefore they would have to wash. Well then, Rav Ami and Rav Asi koyanim hoyu. Rav Ami and Rav Asi were koyanim, and therefore they had that heter of being since they anyway are people who eat truma. And they're used to this idea of being careful not to touch the truma with their bare hands, so therefore we allow them to do that kind of thing, to not wash and just wrap their hands in a cloth and eat that way. But on the other hand, but for regular people, it wouldn't be so. Now here is again where Tosfos points out that it means, Tosfos explains, in other words, that it means actually no. So it means when we say hitiru mapal oichle truma, it means that, because Koyanim are used to eating truma, therefore they're allowed it even when they eat cholin, because they're used to it with truma, so therefore we can rely on them for cholin. Lo yitiru mapal oichle cholin v'tara would mean a Yisrael who's not careful, a Yisrael who doesn't regularly eat truma. So even though, again, he's used to eating al taras haKodesh, he's used to eating his food with the standards of Kodesh, nevertheless, we're not going to give him that break and allow him to eat without washing, because the fact is, he doesn't regularly eat truma, so even though he regularly eats chulin al taras haKodesh, nevertheless, we do have to be careful, because he might mistakenly still touch it. And in fact, the Maharam Shif says something says more explicitly about that. Even if he's Yisrael, and the whole reason of Tchilos Yadayim is to be careful about Truma. So if he's going to eat Chulin with a cloth, how could it possibly cause a problem with Truma? Because if he eats Truma with a cloth, it wouldn't be a problem. Nevertheless, we're saying don't do that. You still have to wash when it comes to Chulin. Only when it comes to truma is it fine. There was a Tosfos in a different place, again the Tosfos in Yuma, who says that no, I mean even for Kohenim it's only allowed when they themselves are eating truma. So in this case, Reb Zeira found them eating truma and thought they still have to wash, and the Gemara is saying no, since right now they're eating truma, then therefore you don't have a problem. So you end up having machlokas rishonim on this point actually of whether in fact you are allowed to ever eat bread. With your hands wrapped in a cloth, whether there are any heterin for it. The Alter Rebbe in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim summarizes, and he says that no, when we talk about over here as far as wrapping your hands with cloth, he says that would be for other kinds of things. When we talked about, for example, we talked about yesterday about eating wet fruits or vegetables, so then we can say that you can be that way there. Technically, we said that you should in principle have to wash, but in practice we don't do that. So then that kind of thing. So actually, what the Alter Rebbe says is no. When you have, for example, things like compote or whatever, where everybody always eats them with knife or fork or spoon, so then you can eat them without, then you can eat them without washing your hands. But the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, when it comes to dovashati buli b'mashkev, vegetables or fruits that are in fact dipped in one of the shiva mashkim, then you would in fact have to wash netilas yadayim. Then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, if you're in a situation where you can't easily find water, then you could use a cloth for that. But for bread, the Alter Rebbe says there's absolutely no heter not to eat it with knife and fork, not to eat it with a cloth. Yesh Mekilim, he says, summer makel, if you're traveling on the way and it's going to be at least 4 mil until you get to water, then you can wrap your hands in a cloth and eat. But even then, the Alter Rebbe says, Yesh Chokim, though there are others who disagree with that, and Hamach Matova El Abracha. So basically, you have very, very limited, at least according to the Alter Rebbe, you have a very, 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 very limited circumstances. Almost nowadays, you would almost never find such circumstances where a person should be able to eat regular chulin bread without washing. You always have to wash no matter what. Okay. The Gemara says, here's another question. Suppose a person is eating, somebody else is feeding him. So does the person who's eating need to wash his hands before he's fed or not? So on the one hand, he's not touching the food. On the other hand, the fact is he is eating bread. And you would have, you know, the Shulchan Aruch talks about, you do have the same question as far as eating with knife and fork. So in other words, the idea is, it's one thing when you're wrapping your hands in a cloth, you still might accidentally touch it with your bare hands. But if somebody else is feeding you and you're not touching the food at all, maybe there'd be less concern and maybe you don't have to wash. So yes or no? So the Moses Toshma will bring a proof that Rav Hamnuna bar Schorda have a koi kamed Rav Hamnuna. Rav Huna bar Schorda was one time standing as a Talmud in front of Rav Hamnuna. Bolam le umsa. He bolam for him a piece of meat. Rashi explains two explanations of bolam. The Shodesh bolam, beis lamed mem, is a rare Shodesh in Tanakh. So you have, for example, a pasuk in Tehillim, mesik vares and edyo livloim, that you use a bridle or reins on an animal. So one way of looking at it, livloim can mean to cut, like you cut and stop the animal's speed by pulling on the reins. So according to that, bolam le'umsa would mean he cut him a piece of meat. Then Rashi says another explanation of bolum means closed up, based on an expression in Bechoros, and in that case, it would mean that he took a piece of meat and buried it in coals in order to roast it. Anyway, the point is, he gave Rav Hamnuna a slice of meat, and Tosfos points out there was also bread with it. So he was giving him a sandwich of bread and meat. And he put it into Rav Hamnuna's mouth. I guess Rav Hamnuna was old or infirm or injured or whatever and wasn't able to feed himself, so Rav Huna bar Schorda is doing it for him. And he ate. Amalei, and he tells him, he loved it, Rav Hamnuna at. You know what? If you were not Rav Hamnuna, if you were not, I know that you're a great Talmud Chacham, and you're careful, actually, the Rashba points out, the Ritva points out, it could also be that the meat was dipped in some kind of sauce, one of the Shiva Mashkim, and in that case, then you would have to wash for it also. Anyway, so Rav Huna bar Schorda tells him, he loved it, Rav Hamnuna at. If you were not Rav Hamnuna, the great Talmud Chacham, who was very careful in mitzvahs, lo yisafin aloch, then I wouldn't be feeding you like this without making sure you wash your hands first. So, what do you mean? It sounds like you can rely on Rav Nuna. Means my time, a lav mishum dezohar v'lenoga. Doesn't that mean, because he knows Rav Nuna is careful, if he didn't wash his hands, then he's not going to touch the food. So he's telling him, someone like you, who I know you're careful in these halachas, and you wouldn't touch the food if you didn't wash your hands, so you I can feed without washing. A regular person, I wouldn't be able to do that. So that would imply, in other words, that so that would imply that now, you know, the fact is we don't make a difference in takanas. So in other words, though, it would mean therefore if Rav Hamnuna is able to eat without Rav Huna having checked whether he washed his hands, it sounds like therefore if a person is being fed, he does not in fact have to wash his hands. So in other words, the Ritva explains that, you know, still, if Talmud Chacham is going to be feeding somebody else who didn't wash his hands, it's still better not to do that unless he knows that person is careful and is not going to touch the bread himself. So therefore, so Rav Huna is saying, you know what, only because I know you don't have to wash your hands in this case, because there's less of a concern that you touch, and I know that you, Rav Hamnuna, are a great Talmud Chacham, and you would be, and even if a regular person might accidentally touch, you are going to be careful not to. Therefore, I can feed you like this. But it sounds like the basic din is you don't have to wash in a case like that. So, lav mishum dezohar v'lenoga, isn't it? Because he's careful not to touch. And the answer is loy. No, it's rather dezoriz kodim u'moshi. It's rather because he knew that Rav Hamnuna was diligent to wash his hands in the first place. Meaning the difference is between zohar and zoriz. Rashi explains like this. Zohar means you're careful b'shas maisa, not to do something wrong. Zoriz goes beyond that. Zoriz is you proactively roya sanola. You see what's going to happen, what's going to be, and you make sure proactively to avoid the issue in the first place. So in this case, then, in other words, he's telling Rav Hamnuna, it's not just that you're careful that you're not going to touch it without having washed your hands. It's more than that. Your zoriz, I know for a fact that you must have washed before, and therefore I'm able to feed you knowing that you had already washed before. So that's the idea. In other words, it doesn't mean he's saying you don't have to wash. On the contrary, he's saying you do need to wash. You do need to wash, and I know that you were diligent, and I know you were careful to do that proactively. So you have the famous braisa that's mentioned in a couple of places in Shas, going through the different levels of greatness of greatness and midas that a person can go from one level to another. And the first two are zehirus mivia the day zrizus, that zehirus, being careful, brings a person to zrizus, brings a person to being diligent. And so here you have the example where zohir is being careful after the fact. To that an Aveda shouldn't be done, and then Zrizus is beyond that, is being proactive to make sure don't even put yourself in a situation like that in the first place. You have the famous Musa Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, which is all based on that Braisa and goes through the details. How does a person become a Zohir? How does a person become a Zoriz? And so forth, with all the midas over there. And he explains differently. He explains Zahirus is to avoid doing a Loisessa. Zrizus is to be careful about an assay to do the right thing in the first place. And he goes in great detail to explain how each of those things can be accomplished, how each of those things can be made a reality in a person's life, one stage after another. Okay, in any case, the point is, it comes out from that story, so we can't really prove one way or the other. Does he mean that I know you're careful and you wouldn't touch, or does it mean I know that you're proactive and you made sure not to be in that situation in the first place, but rather to wash? Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. To Omer Abzer Omer Rab, Lo Yitin Odom Prusel, Sech Piv Shol Shamash, a person should not put a piece of his bread into the waiter's mouth, so the waiter is going around and serving people, and one of the people at the meal is going to give him a piece of bread and put it in his mouth. The pastor has to put it in his mouth because the waiter is busy carrying plates and cups and trays and things like that, so he doesn't have his hands free, so you would put the food in his mouth. But don't do that. Elein Ken Yedei Boishin Notal Yadav. Don't do that unless you know that the waiter washed his hands. So you see that on the face of it, that when a person is being fed by somebody else, like you're the waiter, he needs to wash his hands. And by the way, he continues with more brachas, with more dinim on this subject. The waiter would have to make a bracha for every cup that he drinks. Meaning, because whenever you offer him a drink, he doesn't know. It's not his meal, after all. He's only the one serving, so therefore he doesn't know whether he's going to get another drink. So in other words, normally like this, when you eat, so of course when you wash hamotzi, then you're making hamotzi and it covers everything. And the same thing when you make, for example, you make a bracha on a drink, then it covers all the drinks that you have throughout that meal. But here, the waiter doesn't know every time when he gets a drink, am I going to get another drink afterwards? So it's considered that there's hesach hadas between one and the other. And therefore, since there's hesach hadas, then each time he would need to make another bracha. The post can talk about that if in fact he has in mind to be motzi any other later cups that they give him, then he wouldn't have to make a bracha again. But okay. The enim avaracha called prusa. However, he does not have to make a separate bracha on each piece of bread that they give him because it actually explains they're not going to deny him the amount of food he needs to eat. In other words, it's one thing, drinks. Those are more like a thing of chashivos, so they might not offer him that much. But the food, they know they're going to give him his fill as much as he needs, so therefore he knows to begin with, when he makes a bracha on the first piece of bread, that it's going to cover all the later ones. Okay. So the Gemara explains, Amar Papa, b'shleimah de Rav Rav Yechanan loyka. Now, so that's what Rav Zera is quoting in the name of Rav. Rav Yechanan, Amar Rav Yechanan says, no, mevarachol kol prusa prusa. As a matter of fact, the waiter would also have to make a bracha on every piece of bread that he's going to be given, because again, he doesn't know whether he's going to be getting another one, so therefore there's hesach hadas. Now, how do we reconcile those two statements before we get to the point about giving the person bread to eat and whether he has to wash or not? So Amar Papa, b'shleimah de Rav Rav Yechanan loykasha. The difference between Rav and Rav Yochanan is not a kasha. They're not contradicting one another because hod ikah adam choshev, hod leka adam choshev. It depends whether there's an important person by the meal or not. If there's an important person, then the waiter can be sure that they're going to give him as much as he needs. Because an Adam Choshev is a Talmud Chacham who knows that you have to give the waiter, some of the food in order that he's not just watching all this food being served and he doesn't get to eat from it. So therefore, he's going to make sure that the waiter is going to be given bread or other food as much as necessary. Another way of looking at it, Rabbeinu Yonah explains, is that it means, because if there's an Adam Choshev, then it means lots of food is going to be prepared, so therefore the waiter can assume that they're going to be able to give him enough for him to a decent amount as well. So Rav's case, that he wouldn't have to make another bracha, would be when there's an Adam Choshev. Hodolaka Adam Choshev, as opposed to Rav Yechanan, it's talking about there's no Adam Choshev, and therefore, so he doesn't know whether they're going to be giving him enough bread, and therefore there's hesach hadas between one and the next. So that explains their opinions. But the bottom line, Hakama Elim Ken Yedash and Nato Yadav. The bottom line, though, is we're saying that you can give him the food only if you know that he washed his hands. Now you're putting the food into his mouth; he's not touching it, and yet we see that he needs to wash. So doesn't that show that the person needs to wash even if he's going to be fed without him touching the food? Now, an interesting point is, what do we care? Why is the Gemara bringing in and discussing this whole matter of whether he has to make a bracha on each thing or not? That belongs in the Masechta Brachas. That doesn't really belong over here. So the Maharam brings a different gear, and Rabbi Yochanan says mevorachok prusa prusa and v'loy pligi, and there's no argument, so there's not all this b'shleima the Rav Rebbe, the Rav Rabbi Yochanan, there's not this whole discussion, there's just a statement the Gemara says, having brought Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, that there's no contradiction between them. On the other hand, Marsha explains like this. If Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are actually arguing, well, then one thing is going to depend on the other. Rav is going to say he doesn't have to make a bracha on every piece of bread. He also doesn't have to, wash his hands. He already ate a piece of bread. He washed for that. He doesn't have to wash again, and he doesn't have to make another bracha again. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, if he anyway has to make a new bracha on each piece of bread, Esther Hadass, maybe he should also have to wash his hands again. Therefore, we're saying that, that in that case, actually, he would not actually have to wash again. But we see that he does have to wash to begin with. So the answer is Shani Shamash Tatarid. The difference is because the waiter is very busy serving the people, so therefore he may forget and touch the food that he's eating. So maybe you could say, in other words, normally you feed somebody, maybe you don't. So the fact that he's touching the bread he's serving to other people, that doesn't matter. We talked about before, the whole point of washing is only for you to eat, not to touch the bread. But here, in the course of serving, he may, at some point, when somebody is feeding him, when somebody is putting a piece of bread into his mouth, he may touch it, and therefore we require him to wash. That doesn't show in a case where the person is physically unable to touch it that he should have to wash. Maybe, maybe not. So the Gemara kind of drops the point at this point, and it comes out basically you do have to wash even in that case. So even if you're not actually going to be able to touch the food, nevertheless you still need to wash. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Well, that's what the Gemara is going to say at the end of here. The halacha is going to be that even if you're being fed, you still need to wash. The Gemara is going to say that in the last line before the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa in this connection. Lo yitin adam prusal shamash ben shak kos biyadu shabal abayis. Don't give, when you're giving food to the waiter, don't give it to one of the guests. Don't give food to the waiter. Ben shak kos biyadu. Whether the waiter himself is holding a cup, or whether the balabais is holding a cup, because something might go wrong in the soda. We've had this expression before. It means, in other words, like, for example, in this case, the host is going to get angry. He's going to get upset that you're giving away the food which he needs for the guests, and you're giving it to the waiter. So now the problem is, again, if he's drinking, he has a cup in his hand and he's drinking, then it might go down the wrong way because he gets upset. And therefore, you're going to put him in danger. Rashi explains, even if he doesn't get angry, he's afraid, though, that he's going to run out of food, so he's going to be looking very carefully, and he's going to end up spilling the cup. So now, for the same reason, if the waiter is holding the cup, then also you shouldn't, because he might spill it. And the Bach understands Rashi to be saying that the waiter might drop the cup. For example, because he's afraid, the balabais maybe is looking at him, is giving him a dirty look, and therefore he's going to be afraid and he's going to drop it. The Maharam shifts at a different point. In other words, he's holding a cup, he's busy with his cup, and all of a sudden you're handing him a piece of bread, then he may get a little discombobulated and drop something or whatever. Then there's a whole other explanation that Rabbeinu Yeruchim gives, an explanation that says, Akos biyadei means when the guest is holding a cup, then he shouldn't at the same time be giving a piece of bread to the waiter, because then again, the balabais is going to give him a dirty look. Why are you giving away my food when I'm trying to save enough food for the guest? So therefore, so he's going to end up dropping or spilling the cup. So you do have to give food to the waiter. It's a matter of rachmanus to give food to the waiter, so he's not just watching everybody else eat, and he's not eating, but you have to know when to give it to him in such a way that it's not going to cause any, that's not going to cause any problems or anybody getting discomforted during the suda. And continues the Braisa, and also if the waiter hasn't washed his hands, also then you're not allowed to put a piece of bread into his mouth. So there you go. Then you see that even though you're feeding him and he's not putting it into his own mouth, nevertheless you still have to wash. So actually the Maharsha explains that it means the other way around. It means if the waiter has not washed, then he is not allowed to put food into somebody else's mouth. Now later on, the Gemara is going to explain that if you're feeding somebody else, you don't have to wash, but it's different over here. Maharsha explains that the waiter himself may eat from some of the food as well.
When you say, we talk about washing without handling the food, that's with a bracha?
Yeah, but Pashtus, if a person is washing in a case like that, he would have to make a bracha, yeah. No, apparently not. Once the Gemara establishes the halacha at the bottom right before the Mishnah, that says, Oichel machas machel, that if a person is being fed, sodach nitzil sedayim, once we say he has to wash, then the Pashtus, it would mean a bracha. So yeah, as a practical matter, let's say, for example, a person is in a hospital, and he's not able to feed himself, and somebody is feeding him, then the Pashtus, he would have to wash first. Which is to say,
and if he cannot wash, he doesn't make
the
bracha.
Then the other person would have to wash his hands. And as we said, ideally it would be that other person would be a Jew rather than a goy. But it sounds like, but where it's not possible, then it sounds like you can be makel and have a goy do the washing as well. Yeah.
And that applies even after the korban.
Because the dinim and the tzilas yadayim applied just as much nowadays as they did then. Yeah.
But Ilchus Metilas Adayim is Ilchus Tuma, and Tuma is everything's tummy today.
It's true. Nonetheless, though, we said that it's Mishum Srach Truma. It's in order to get Koyanim accustomed to what they need to do when they eat Truma. Nowadays, we don't have Koyanim eat Truma either, but the fact is, we still have the Takana. It's still a Takana. First of all, there was the idea we learned there was a matter of the Skadishim, the Yisim Kedoshim. You should be holy, a Jew should be holy when he eats, and therefore he has to wash. But there's also this way, it shows that we still expect there is yet going to be Truma. There is yet going to be Koyanim eating Truma, and therefore they have to be used to it, lost it, lovely, and therefore even now all of us have to wash for that reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Onward. The Gemara says, here's another question. If you're giving somebody else food, do you have to wash? So let's say, again, somebody's in the hospital, you're coming and visiting them, and you're feeding them bread, do you need to wash beforehand? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can bring a proof to Tani Dvei Menashe. We learn in a yeshiva, we learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Menashe, that even though you're not allowed to wash your hands on Yom Kippur, it's one of the things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur, but Reb Shimon Gamliel Lema, Isha Medichas Yoda Achas Lamayim, a woman, a mother, can wash one hand in water, and then give a piece of bread to her little child. So the child is too young to be fasting on Yom Kippur, but the mother, before she's a... before she's feeding him, does have to wash her hands, and even though it's Yom Kippur, normally you're not allowed to wash, but Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying that she should do that, that she should do that. And in other words, Maharam Shif explains the question is, you know, we did make it clear before that when you're just handling bread, you don't have to wash your hands, but here the problem is not just he's handling it, she's actually feeding it to the child, so maybe you would say the Takonim Netilas Yadayim is any time bread is being put into a mouth, whether your mouth or somebody else's mouth. So therefore, so maybe she should have to wash, and we're bringing a proof over here that on the face of it, that Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying she should, in fact, wash her hand before she gives to her baby. So therefore, that implies, therefore, that you have to wash your hand before you feed somebody else. And in fact, the Braisa continues, Omer Olav al Shammai Azaken, they said about Shammai Azaken, the colleague of Hillel, Shalei Rotzel Lahachel B'yodei Achas, he didn't want, he had a little child, and one time Yom Kippur, he didn't want to wash one hand in order to give the child food, so he didn't want to be over on washing on Yom Kippur. Another way of looking at it is he didn't want to only wash one hand, and he figured he can't wash two hands on Yom Kippur because the other hand wouldn't be necessary, so therefore he wasn't going to feed him. He was going to tell other people to feed the kid. But the Gozer Olav, Shayachal B'Shteyad, the Chum ordered him to actually give the kid to eat with both hands. In other words, yes, wash both hands and give him to eat. So in other words, this way, demonstrate that the halacha is that you're allowed to wash your hands, for that you're allowed to wash your hands for this purpose in order to give a child to eat. Now normally, of course, you have to wash both hands, but that's the we're saying over here. Maybe when it comes to you yourself eating, you have to wash both hands, but maybe when it comes to feeding somebody else, maybe you'll need to wash only one hand. In any case, so we see therefore that you have to wash your hands before you're feeding somebody else. Rabbi says that's not a proof. The reason why in that case they made Shammai wash, and why a woman has to wash her hand before feeding her baby on Yom Kippur, is because of Shivsa. Shivsa, Rashi explains, is a ruach ra, an evil spirit that rests on a person's hands when he didn't wash Negovasu in the morning. Now, if a person washed Negovasu in the morning, now we learned yesterday, in principle, a person could wash their hands and have in mind for the entire day that they're going to be careful not to get their hands dirty or whatever, and then they can eat bread the rest of the day because of that. So we said there is such a concept in principle, although in practice you don't have very many cases where you can follow that. But never mind that. Rashi says even just the fact that a person washed his hands in the morning, that takes off this shivsa. But otherwise, you still have that. Now, Yom Kippur morning, you don't wash Negovasu. So therefore, so now there's the concern that now you're going to feed the baby, then you have this shivsa, this ruach ra. So that's a coin to Rashi. Tosfos explains that, no, listen, Yom Kippur morning, you should be able to wash, no different than if your hands are dirty. The fact is, if your hands are dirty, you're allowed to wash it, and you're allowed to wash it even on Yom Kippur. And the fact is, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, when it mentions about this Shivsa, the Gemara also calls over there Bas Melech, which literally means the princess, that the Gemara explains, if you touch your eyes, or your nose, or your mouth, or whatever, then it causes problems. So what are you going to tell me? You can't wash, and you can't touch any of those parts of your face the entire day? So Tosfos says what it means is the shivsa over here, it has nothing to do with nothing to do with washing in your with washing in the morning. It means process rinse. Rabbeinu Chananel, it means the ruach ra. It's an evil spirit that rests on the food when you're going to feed a child like 4 or 5 years old, which can choke him if the person who's feeding him didn't wash their hands at that time. So in other words, the person did wash their hands in the morning for negovaster, but now later in the day. You're feeding a child, and Rabbeinu Chananel explains that that still there would be this problem of shivsa if you don't wash your hand now. So you'd have to wash your hand now because of the shivsa. And therefore that would be a problem. The Aruch gives it slightly differently. The Aruch says, Tosfos says if you're 4 or 5 years old, the Aruch says when the baby is any time between 2 months old and 7 years old, and specifically it grabs a hold of the child and causes them to, and causes their nerves in the back of the neck to deteriorate. So whatever, the point is, in other words, that according to that, then it would mean that that Shammai had to wash, and that we're saying over here, a mother before she feeds her child, and even Kippur has to wash, not because they didn't wash in the morning. Tosfos learns they could wash in the morning, but because right now, if they don't, there's going to be this problem of shivsa. Which in that case, Tosfos says, nowadays, we don't find that ruach ra among us, just like we learned a couple of days ago in the Gemara about various things that you're not supposed to do because of ruach ra or shadim or whatever, and generally we're not careful about them nowadays, so therefore that would be the case now, that we're not careful to wash before we feed a child. Anyway, the point is that now, for example, so not necessarily do you need to actually wash before you're feeding somebody. Again, here we're talking about, according to Rashi, the vote is as long as you wash your hands in the morning, you may not need to again now to feed somebody else. And according to Tosfos, the danger is only with a child, not if you're feeding an adult, for example, or even an older child. Okay, so no proof from that. So the Gemara says Toshma, but we can bring a proof from the following story. The father of Shmuel, one time when Shmuel was still a boy, then Shmuel's father found him crying. So he asked his son Shmuel, why are you crying? And Shmuel answers, because my Rebbe hit me. So his father asked him, Amai, why did he hit you? And in other words, Shmuel, we can assume Shmuel was a good student. The Rebbe wouldn't have a reason to hit him. So the answer is the Amali. So Shmuel says, because the Rebbe, apparently the cheder took place in the Rebbe's house, in the Malamed's house, and the Malamed had his little kids over there. So the Amali, so he says to me, he says, Shmuel, the little boy, says, he told me, Kasafis v'droi v'lein moshis yodeh, or yodecha, you gave food to my son, and you didn't wash your hand. In other words, apparently, again, the cheder took place in the Malamed's house. There was a little kid over there where Shmuel was one of the Talmidim over there, and he fed the Malamed's child, and he didn't wash his hands before giving him bread. So therefore, the Rebbe was upset with that and hit him for that. So the gear that we have in front of us in the Gemara is, well, Moshe, your day, you didn't wash his hands, but on the side of it here, it says that Mashal points out, it's supposed to be Yadecha, your hands, because that's what we're talking about, that Shmuel, the one who's feeding the child, the Malamed is saying, you should have washed your hands. Now, my Rav Ranchburg just says, just take out the word, you didn't wash. Okay, so I've heard Shmuel, says Shmuel's father asked about my Moshe, Taka, why didn't you wash your hands before you fed him? Amalei, so Shmuel answers, what's the logic? He's eating, I should have to wash my hands. The concept of the tilakidayim doesn't apply to the one who feeds, it applies to the one who's eating. So Shmuel's father says to him, or maybe just there's another girsa that takes out the word lay that he just said, that he says to himself, or maybe even he says to the Malamed, Loi Messiah de la Gomer, not only this Malamed has not learned the halachas, Mim Khanami Machi, and he's even hitting a kid. You don't know the halacha, and you don't know the halacha, and you're going and hitting my kid for no good reason, basically. Okay, so the Gemara says v'hilchos, so the bottom line halacha is oichol machmas masel sodach nesilas hadayim. When a person is being fed, even though he's not touching the food himself, he still needs to wash his hands. Machel and sodach nesilas hadayim. But when you're feeding somebody else, you don't need nesilas hadayim. Again, according to Rashi, as long as you wash your hands in the morning, and according to Tosfos, Before you're feeding a child, back in the days when ruach ruah was more common than before you're feeding a child of a few years old and you have to wash your hands, but otherwise not. As far as washing on Yom Kippur, by the way, because of this machlokas we're showing him, whether to wash or not is why we wash only up to our knuckles on Yom Kippur morning and also Tisha B'Av morning, and then Matzah Yom Kippur and Matzah Tisha B'Av we wash in the regular way. Okay. So that ends the halachas of Netilas Yadayim that we've been talking about over the last couple of dafim. So now we have a basic, now we have a basic understanding of many of the relevant dinim. Again, the reason it came in was because we were talking about washing between milchiks and fleishiks, so that led into this whole discussion. Now we're going to get back to, we're going to continue with halachas of Basa B'Cholav. So the Mishnah says, supposing we'd be allowed to tie together, to bundle up together meat and cheese in the same piece of cloth, as long as they're not touching one another. So let's say, so you have a large piece of cloth, you're going to tie up one part of it with a piece of meat in it and a different part. You're going to have a piece of cheese in it, and then you're allowed. But if they're going to be together in the same part and they're going to be touching, you're not allowed to do that. As the Gemara is going to explain. Reb Shimon Gamliel says another relevant din. Now, like this, we learned at the beginning of the Perek that you can't put meat and cheese on the same table where you're eating. But Reb Shimon Gamliel, Shneach Sinoyin, two guests who don't know one another, as the Gemara is going to say, they can eat on one table. One can be eating fleishik, one can be eating milchik. We're not concerned that one is going to take from the other one's food because they're strangers. They don't know one another, so therefore they're not likely. So one of them is not likely to take food from the other. Okay. As far as the first din of the Mishnah, we said that you're allowed to have meat and cheese wrapped up in the same cloth as long as they're not touching one another. The Gemara says, why? What's the problem? In a gebezem, a zebezem, I have. And if they do touch one another, what's the problem? Tzonin v'tzonin, it's cold touching cold, and they don't absorb from one another. So why shouldn't it be allowed even to have them in the same covering or the same bag or whatever? It is true, because they're dry, you wouldn't need to peel away a layer of each one because they don't absorb from one another. But don't you require at least to rinse it off, because a little bit of substance from one rubs off on the other. So therefore, you can't put them together because you might forget to rinse them off and then you might eat them. The poskim bring that usually meat and cheese will have a little bit of moisture to them. If they're both completely dry, then in principle you don't even need to wash them. On the other hand, if they're fatty, then the klima gadim brings that no, it wouldn't be enough to wash them. Then you would actually need to wash them and scrub them well, because otherwise the fattiness from one is not going to go away so easily. So in other words, in short, we learn from this. The poskim point out that that you're not allowed to put two things together in such a way where one or both of them are going to require washing afterwards, because then you might forget to wash them. So let's say an example of that would be putting kosher food into a non-kosher container where you have to rinse it off afterwards. You're not allowed to do that, because what if you forget to rinse it off? But when you have something which anyway needs to be rinsed off, then anyway, before you eat it, then there's no issur. So one example the post can bring is, for example, let's say you have meat that has not been kashered yet, you would be allowed to put it in a non-kosher keli. You're anyway going to rinse it off before you're anyway going to have to rinse it as part of the salting process, so therefore such a thing would be allowed. You have other examples where you have to rinse something before you eat it, And then such things you would be allowed to put in a non-kosher keli because you're anyway going to rinse it. But ordinary foods, which you're not going to, you would not be allowed to for that reason, because at least it needs rinsing, and you may forget to do that. Okay. The Mishnah continued, Reb Shimon Gamliel, Mishneach Sinoin Ochan Al Shulchan Chola. We said that Reb Shimon Gamliel says two guests can be eating by one table, one milchik, one fleishik, and it's not a problem. Omer Abchonen Ba'ami, Omer Shmuel, Leishanu Elashen Makirin Zeth Zeth. That would work only if the two guests don't know one another. So therefore, again, they're not likely to take each other's food. Ava makirin zeh zeh, but if they know each other, also, then it would be also, because they might take from each other's food, or they might offer each other's food. Okay, the Gemara says Tani Nami Hochi. In fact, we learn like that in a Braisa. Reb Shimon Gamliel, a Mishneach Sinoyin Shnis Aruchu Lepunnet Echad. When you have two guests that both happen to be in the same hotel, Zebam and Asofen veZebam and Adorim. One came from the north and one came from the south, which implies, in other words, that they don't know each other because that means they come from completely different geographical areas, so they never knew each other before. Zebam Achatichase veZebam Gvinasei. One has his slice of meat, the other one has his piece of cheese. So then they're allowed to eat at the same table. One's eating meat, the other's eating cheese. And there's no problem because they don't know each other. So we see very clearly that from this braisa that Reb Shimon Gamliel is talking about only when they don't know one another. Okay. However, the braisa continues. Now, it would be also to put meat and cheese on the table only when we said at the beginning of the perek that we said that you can't put meat and cheese on the same table. So first of all, it has to be when the two people know one another. But then also, in addition to be also, it's only a problem, elo b'tfisa achas. Only when they're in tfisa achas. Literally, tfisa achas means one grab. So Rashi explains it means when they're in one bundle. So here Tosfos points out that it means if they're in one bundle, but there's something in between them, then that wouldn't be a problem. So therefore Tosfos points out as a halacha from it, when you have two people are eating at the same table, one milchik, one fleishik, then what they'll do is they'll put something in between as a hefsik between them. That's something that's not normally on the table. Or another possibility is each one eats on his own placement. So then that way it'll be shtei tfisis, that way it'll be two different groupings, and therefore that'll be a hecker, that'll be a reminder to them to not accidentally take food from each, to not accidentally take or offer food from each other. So it has to be something that's not normally on the table, and therefore that's considered a hecker. On the other hand, Tosfos brings another explanation that tfisa achas would mean when it all comes from one purse, meaning in other words when they have pooled funds. When they have, for example, pooled funds, and they pooled their funds together to buy food, which then the Gemara is going to ask them, what's the difference? So why would that make a difference? So the Gemara asks, tfisa achas sapadaitach, what's the difference? One tfisa. So if you say that tfisa achas means, again, in one grouping without any separation, then what do you mean? Literally with them touching one another. So you would think that that's the only case where it's also, what do you mean? Even without that, we said they can't eat together on the same table unless they don't know each other. According to Tosfos, the question is, because it came from one expense account, therefore that's a reason to make it more also. What does one have to do with the other? So it means rather it can't be like one tfisa. So again, there has to be some kind of separation between them, or it means, in other words, that when it comes to, if you're talking about expenses, means if they know one another, then it would also be a problem even if they're each buying their own food. So according to that, then it comes out that no, the fact that the idea that you should be allowed to eat with a hecker between them, Tosfos says, according to that second explanation, wouldn't follow. The poskim accept the first explanation, and therefore that would mean, again, so if they're each eating on their own placemat, and that's fine, or if they don't have placemats, they're just eating on the tablecloth or whatever, but they put between them, let's say, a loaf of bread or something else as a hecker, then that would be allowed, although the Ramah points out that would work only if they're not eating from the bread. If they're going to be eating from the bread, it won't be a hecker because it's anyway going to be there between them. But then what they could do is they could put a keli that they drink from, for example, which wouldn't normally be on the table. That would be a valid hecker. All the more so if, for example, they put a lamp or some other things like that, it would be a hecker. Also, by the way, that Amma points out that, yeah, they can't eat from the same loaf of bread, because, again, one's going to be touching it with fleishik hands, the other is milchik, and you're going to have a problem. For the same reason he points out, they can't drink from one keli together, same problem, because we're not talking about where they're pouring from a pitcher. We're talking about if they share a cup, for example, that would be a problem, because bits of food stick to the cup. And for the same reason, each one should have his own salt cellar. For the same reason, you dip your food in the salt, and then you're going to have residue of one left for the other. So you have a number of dinim that come out from this as far as separation between milchik and fleishik when two people are eating at the same table. Okay. Now, so far we said if the two guests don't know one another, then it's mutter. And we're saying if they do know one another, then you need some kind of hecker. So now, what about what if you have two brothers, for example, but they're not on good terms, so they're not going to allow one to take from the other one's food? So now, can they eat at the same table without any kind of hefer or anything like that? So maybe it would be allowed, or maybe it would be allowed because they're mad at each other, and therefore they're and therefore they're not gonna share their food? Or is the problem maybe the problem is that most people are gonna see these are two brothers and they're gonna think that it's allowed even when two brothers are on good terms. So it would be obviously not brothers any kind of time when you have two people who are two people who know each other but are machbid on one another. So you have the same kind of question. So would it be allowed? Amalei, the Abaye answers him with a phrase taken from a Gemara in Psachim. The Gemara talks about over there as far as matzah. You're not allowed matzah, of course, has to be made very quickly so it doesn't become chametz. And the Gemara mentions over there, therefore, you're not allowed to make decorated matzahs. Because the decorations make time to make, and therefore there's a concern that meanwhile it's going to become chametz. So then the Gemara says over there that there was a guy named Baitris Ben Zunin, who was a professional baker, and he says, I actually have stamps, like molds, that I can use to make decorations on my cakes and things very quickly. Can I use them for my matzahs that I make for my customers for Pesach? Because after all, in my case, I make them very quickly with the stamp, and therefore there's no problem that it's going to take a long time to make like it's done by hand. And the Chachamim answered him with an expression, Yoimru, people are going to say, all kinds of other decorated cakes or decorated matzahs are also or srike baitus mutar, and only the ones from baitus are allowed. People are not going to know the difference. People are going to think that once they're going to see that people are eating decorated matzahs with pictures or whatever on them, and they're going to think it's allowed when other people make it as well. So in other words, you can't do like that. It's going to cause a takola. People are going to think that it's allowed. That it's allowed no matter what. So the same thing over here. People are going to think that two brothers are allowed to eat together, and they're not with one milchus, one fleishik, and they're not going to realize that in this particular case, they're not getting along. So the Gemara asks back, "Vili taimeich?" Okay, but according to your svara, that we're concerned about what people are going to see and what they're going to misunderstand, then what about here's another case where we seem to allow somebody to do something which is not normally mutter. Chodah Amar Rab Asi Amar Rab Yechanan. Rab Asi tells us in the name of Rab Yechanan, Misha Ein La'Ela Choluk Echad, a person who has only one undershirt. So now, we know you're not allowed to do laundry on Chol HaMoed with certain rare exceptions. Now, one of the cases is, let's say, for example, a person has to wash his underwear before Yom Tov. But let's say he has only one undershirt anyway. He can't wear it the entire Yom Tov. It's going to be very dirty. So necessarily, he's going to have to wash it again during Chol HaMoed. So now he's going to be allowed to wash it. So now, but how do we do it? Mutal Chavse b'chol shomoyed. So he's allowed to wash it on Chol HaMoed. Now, don't you have the same thing? Yoimru, aren't people going to say, kol ha'srik and asurin, or srik et baitus mutonin? Don't you have the same problem that people are not going to realize that this guy only has the one undershirt, and therefore they're going to think, like with baitus and his decorated matzahs, that this kind of thing is allowed? So what you see in that case, the chachamim don't make that zera, and they allow him to wash the choluk. Literally, choluk means more like a tunic, but basically a tunic is a long undershirt. So we see that we allow him to wash it during Chol HaMoed, and we're not concerned that people are going to misunderstand the situation. So why over here? Why by the matzahs is there a problem, and why by the two brothers who are not getting along is there a problem? And the answer is Hosam Ha'omer Ma'abravashi Ezodei Mechiacholav. The answer is because Ma'abravashi explains in that case the belt demonstrates that he only has the one. Namely, like this. This kind of undershirt, it was made in such a way that it had a belt and had belt loops in it, and it would have a belt. So usually what would happen when you're going to change your undershirt, then you would take the belt and put it onto the other one. This person has only, so in other words, the undershirt always had, it was always worn with a belt over it. Now, this person only has one undershirt. When he goes to wash it, he's not going to take off the belt. He's going to wash it together with the belt, because anyway, he hasn't got another tunic to put the belt on anyway. So therefore, when people see that he's washing the tunic, the undershirt, with the belt on it, then they're going to realize right away that it means that he doesn't have another one. This is how Rashi explains it over here. Rashi and Moed Katan, which is where these halachas are, the halachas of Chol HaMoed are, Rashi and Moed Katan explains it differently. Mind you, there are those who say it seems that the Rashi we have printed in Moed Katan is not actually from Rashi. It's from a different Mephodosh. But anyway, the point is, Rashi or whatever is printed under Rashi's name over there explains like this. When a person only has the one tunic, the one undershirt, well, when he needs to wash it, he's not just gonna, what's he gonna do? Just stand there in his underpants. So what he's gonna do, he's gonna wear an overcoat over it, But and then he's going to put a belt over it because otherwise people are going to see he's not wearing anything under the coat. So now you don't usually wear a belt over that kind of coat, so people are going to understand that he has nothing underneath it, and they're going to realize that he has only the one undershirt. So they'll understand that it's allowed. Therefore, they're going to understand that he's in a special situation. The point is, Rabbeinu Gershom has yet another explanation. We see he doesn't have his belt. His belt is at home and not on him. Therefore, that shows he doesn't have another cholov. In other words, the point is, according to all these explanations, the point is that it's clear that he only has the one cholok, the one tunic, the one undershirt, and therefore we can allow him to wash it on Chol HaMoed, and it's not going to be a problem that people are going to think you're allowed to do laundry on Chol HaMoed. When it comes to srikin, there's no obvious difference between srike baitus and any other. And similarly, when it comes to two brothers who are not getting along, there's not necessarily an obvious difference between them and regular brothers who do, and therefore we're going to ask them to eat the milchiks and fleishiks on the same table altogether, unless there's some kind of heker. And that is, in fact, the halachah.